Welcome to It's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest in our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Gambling is illegal in Florida. Or is it? Florida is one of the largest states for gaming in the nation, but its patchwork regulatory structure has left many lawmakers, lobbyists, and government officials frustrated. Attempts to bring order to the chaos have failed time and time again, and that's led to new and dubious types of gaming to set up shop in the state. Now the Florida legislature is preparing to address the issue again, but what will they do about it? That's ahead on It's About Florida. Gambling is big in Florida, and it's also technically illegal, but various types of gaming-based industries have managed to get carve-outs to that rule, creating a patchwork of exceptions the government has struggled to regulate and control. During the last legislative session, a bill to try and bring some order to the industry went up in flames. Now, Governor Rick Scott has signed off on a $3 billion deal with the Seminole Tribe of Florida to expand and extend banked card games in the state. Now, as Regan McCarthy reports, amid a massive gaming debate in the state, that deal could be in trouble.
Under the agreement, the Seminole Tribe will pay Florida more than $3 billion over the next 7 years. In exchange, the tribe will get to add craps and roulette to the card games and slot machines its casinos already offer. Governor Rick Scott says he thinks the plan is good for the state.
Under this compact, there is an obligation that Seminoles will have to add more jobs, over 4,000 more jobs, direct and indirect, and during construction it would be over 14,000 jobs.
Scott says the next step is to get legislative approval.
It's their decision. I'm just the first step in the process. The legislature gets to go forward. I will respect their decision, but I'm just the first step in the process. We worked hard, my office worked hard to do something I think is good for the state. It's $3 billion. The last compact was $1 billion. But again, this is the legislature's decision to go forward if they want to go forward.
Scott says he thinks the agreement creates flexibility for the legislature, so lawmakers have room to decide how to handle other aspects of gaming. For example, the compact paves the way for language that would allow decoupling at paramutual facilities, meaning it could allow those facilities to offer card games without requiring them to hold horse or dog races. It's a change that has growing support in the legislature. Here's Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz talking about decoupling last February.
For years now, as Chairman Gates and I have been doing this now for several years, is allowing those businesses to make a business decision on whether or not they still want to continue this practice at their facility. That's what is being talked about from a legislative standpoint. Nothing else. No one is trying to ban greyhound racing.
The gaming compact also makes way for slot machines at a paramutual facility in Palm Beach County. It's an idea the state's chief financial officer, Jeff Atwater, says he could get behind. Atwater says it's time to have a roadmap for where gaming in Florida is going.
We tried to arrange a compact before that would define in how this is going to go forward in the state, not looking at this every other year, broadening the gaming industry itself in Florida, but defining it down and reaching an agreement with all the parties. And I just think for our long-term health and brand, that's still the right thing to do.
But the plan also faces significant hurdles. Senate President Andy Gardner has spoken out against gaming expansions in the past, though he says he won't let his stance impact whether a vote on the compact makes it to the floor.
I don't support the expansion of gaming, but I do support the institution of the Senate to make that decision as to what direction they want to go. And when I became or pursued becoming Senate President, I was very clear that, you know, the will of the Senate is where I would be.
And lawmakers in Central Florida hold their own concerns about how even the appearance of a gaming expansion could impact the state's tourism industry. Officials plan to take up the compact during the coming legislative session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
As we just heard from Regan McCarthy, Governor Rick Scott's deal with the Seminole Tribe is running into legislative headwinds. Meanwhile, another tribe is looking to expand its gambling interests in the state. Online fantasy sports systems like FanDuel have popped up, leading law enforcement officials, state and U.S. attorneys to throw out red flags. And internet cafes, which Florida banned a few years ago, are creeping back in. Not to mention the biggest system of them all, the Florida Lottery. Attorney Mark Dunbar represents several members of Florida's gaming industry. He also teaches gaming law at Florida State University. Mark Dunbar, welcome to It's About Florida.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the Seminole Gaming Compact. It was recently signed by the governor, a $3 billion extension of the previous compact that had been in effect. What does this mean for the state of Florida?
Well, I think for the state of Florida, I think it crystallizes the debate on what we want to be as a gambling state. The governor's done a good job sort of throwing his vision out there of trying to achieve a good fiscal number for the state of Florida, certainly well beyond that of his predecessor, Charlie Crist, and but also define it in a way that tries to limit somewhat the scope of gaming across the state.
Now, this compact is between the state of Florida and the Seminole Tribe, and it outlines what is essentially a revenue sharing agreement. More so, though, it extends the banked card games, the blackjack, the roulette, that the casinos can offer, but it also excludes those same types of games at other entities.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting balance. What the governor's done is he's said that we're going to allow blackjack and now add craps and roulette to the Seminole tribe properties throughout the state of Florida, but we are going to limit the rest of the state and the offerings that they're able to have. And it's required under federal law for the tribe to get some level of exclusivity. That's what they pay the state for, is some level of monopoly status. However, the balancing act that the governor's trying to walk here, I think, is already been met with a very chilly reception in the legislature, because you have a lot of legislators that have longstanding pari-mutuel interests in their districts that have been essentially cut out of the equation. And so I think that chilly reception is going to lead to extensive dialogues with the legislature defining or offering its vision on what Florida's gambling future is going to look like. And I think it's going to be pretty different than what the governor presented.
So one of the things that this compact does or would do comes into the area of voter-approved referendum for gambling. You have some counties like Broward that have approved, hey, we want slots in our area. Some of those counties could go ahead under this compact, but other counties, I'm thinking Gadsden here in North Florida, which also has something similar, would not be able to go ahead. How does that work?
Well, the compact, oddly enough, was drafted to get out of a single legislative committee, and that was a Senate Regulated Industries Committee. You can see by the makeup of that committee that the governor and his negotiations was pretty clear that he wanted to do a nod to Palm Beach and the referendum that it conducted, because on that 12-member committee are three members from the Palm Beach delegation, including the president-designate Joe Negron. So from a political calculus standpoint, very pragmatically, I think the governor's office said, okay, we need to do what we can to take care of Palm Beach County. However, that has led to a lot of the chilly reactions, because, for example, you have President Pro Tem Garrett Richter, who is also on that committee. He represents Lee County, and Lee County, despite having a referendum approved on the exact same day as Palm Beach County, was left out. And so I think that is going to be a problem, because you have six counties around the state, in addition to Dade and Broward, that have voted overwhelmingly for their pari-mutuel facilities to have slot machines. And the governor selected one county and one county only to benefit under the new compact. And I have a feeling that as this works through the process, those other six counties like Lee County and Brevard County and Gadsden County, Hamilton and Washington are going to have very credible arguments to say, hey, why are our voters less important than the voters of Palm Beach County?
How does this compact impact the issue of decoupling? We've seen a really big push to kind of
dog and horse racing tracks to allow those facilities to continue operating without allowing those types of races, which many people have said are cruel.
Well, the tribe in their new compact has authorized the state to allow the paramutuals to decouple or essentially get rid of live racing at their facilities. Now, it's ultimately up to the legislature to authorize that. But you have the vast majority of paramutuals in the state of Florida that do not make money on the live racing activity. There are only a couple of dog tracks that make a profit on greyhound racing. There isn't a single High Life Fronton, I believe, that makes money on its High Life. None of the quarter horse tracks make any money on the quarter horse racing. And I think even the harness track in Pompano Beach struggles to make money on its harness racing. Really, the only truly profitable paramutual endeavor that's left in the state of Florida is the thoroughbred racing, which is still a pretty robust industry in Florida. So the governor has allowed, via the compact, for the legislature to consider decoupling those facilities. The problem that you have is you have conservatives in the legislature that know full well that some of these facilities are about to go out of business. And they are asking a very basic question, which is, a long time ago, the voters in these communities voted in favor of a particular paramutual activity. And in order to prop up that paramutual activity, they've been afforded additional gambling entitlements. Now, all of a sudden, they don't want to do that underlying activity anymore, but they want to pick up additional gambling entitlements. And that has a lot of a number of folks in the legislature, including some important leaders, wondering if that isn't an expansion of gaming to otherwise authorize these facilities to evolve into pure gambling facilities instead of the paramutual facilities that their voters voted on a long time ago.
But aren't they doing – I mean, either way, they're still gambling. You're either betting on the horse or the dog race, or you're pouring money into your slot machine. Isn't that – the same thing?
Absolutely the same thing, and I would completely agree with the way you analyze it there, but I do know that there are differing views in the legislature, and you have members of the legislature that are in critical leadership positions that have a fundamental difference of opinion as to whether or not that is the same activity, particularly when you backdrop it against voters approved one gaming activity, not necessarily the others.
Would this have essentially the end result, if you do allow these facilities to decouple, of creating a bunch of little mini casinos?
That is the concern. I think that if decoupling happens, those that are against gambling expansion will say that all you're doing is creating mini casinos. And whether they are mini casinos that just are authorized to conduct simulcast wagering and poker, or whether they are mini casinos that are also allowed to do slot machines, the folks that view that as an expansion of gambling, they take a pretty black and white view that if you eliminate the live activity, you should not be allowed to do any of the other gambling activity.
We've been talking a lot about fantasy sports, DraftKings, and FanDuel. There are bills in the legislature to try and regulate those industries and sort of make them a little bit more legal than they are now. But the gambling compact would seem to kind of go in the opposite direction. I may or may not be interpreting that correctly, but this is a big issue coming up, what to do about fantasy sports betting, skill versus chance.
It is a big issue, and you have important members of the legislature, Representative Matt Gaetz, the chairman of the Finance and Tax Committee in the House, and President-designate Joe Negron in the Senate, are carrying bills to try and legitimize the fantasy sports industry. And it's for the most part kind of a black and white issue. The Attorney General back in 1991 put an opinion out that says that fantasy sports violates state law that prohibits skill-based wagering. And they've come up with a piece of legislation that essentially would define an industry based on some consumer protection practices that you would be required to adopt, and send the filing of those consumer protection activities to the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Now, those of us that have been involved in gambling for the last couple decades in Florida, that probably isn't the best place to put it. The Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services had an incredibly difficult time dealing with another type of internet-based gambling activity, the internet cafes, that led to the loss of a lieutenant governor and a whole bunch of scandals around the state of Florida. And those in the regulated gaming industry, like me, our attitude is we're kind of agnostic as it relates to daily fantasy sports. We know what the law is. And our attitude is if there is going to be another regulated gambling activity, it should be a regulated gambling activity like the others. One of the interesting ironies is that both FanDuel and DraftKings went ahead and filed for full sports gambling licenses in the United Kingdom and submitted themselves to a pretty lengthy background investigation as well as licensure and regulatory process. And yet over here in the United States, they are taking the attitude that they should not subject themselves to that same type of regulation and oversight. And that's concerning. I think that if anybody's going to look at a multi-billion dollar internet gambling industry, which is what we're talking about, there should be some level of prudent oversight, not just a trust me, this is the consumer protection practices we're going to adopt. And I think that Senate President Andy Gardner has taken a pretty good approach, saying that they're going to look hard at this. They're going to look at what they filed for in the United Kingdom and some of the other practices. And the legislature is going to take their time and make sure they don't make an internet cafe type mistake again.
What is the future of gambling in the state of Florida? Gambling is technically illegal, but yet we have it and we have always had it, yet it's still illegal. How do we reconcile this part of it?
Well, the legislature sort of is the ultimate arbiter of what's legal and not, and they have allowed our state to evolve from a small pari-mutuel state to the most diverse gambling state in the country. And looking ahead, I think that this seminal compact gives us the ability to have the discussion on whether we want to become a mature gambling jurisdiction and create a real regulator and do some of the things that more mature regulatory gambling jurisdictions do. But I think the real challenge is how do you balance a lot of the parochial interests, the pari-mutuels that are spread throughout the state, along with the Seminole tribe that has been a good gambling partner with the state of Florida, and the various federal issues that go along with having a tribal gaming enterprise like the Seminoles in our state. I look at the reaction of the legislative leaders to the compact, and it's pretty clear that the compact in its current form has challenges making it through the legislature. I also know that the pari-mutuel industry oftentimes is more concerned about depriving certain groups privileges as opposed to trying to focus collectively on what the industry should look like. And I worry that those two things will combine for another session of nothing from this legislature. And I think that would be unfortunate. Separate and apart from that, if the legislature doesn't do anything, the Supreme Court is going to be stepping in. They have accepted a very important statewide case to determine whether or not the six counties that had referendum are going to be able to have those slot machines. And I think the legislature is aware of that. And they would probably prefer not to have the Supreme Court define what Florida is as a gambling state.
If the legislature does nothing, will this compact stand? It has to be approved by the legislature, but then it still has to go to a federal review as well. What are the different paths, I guess, toward ratification of this deal?
Well, because this compact expands the table game offerings, which are illegal in the state of Florida, it requires formal legislative ratification. And without the legislature's vote, this compact is null and void. And even if the legislature approves this compact, it still has to go up for a review by the Department of Interior. And the Department of Interior could decide that the state of Florida overreached and send it back to the state, rejecting it. So there are a lot more hurdles in front of the Seminole tribe and the governor in this compact than just him putting his signature on a piece of paper.
So obviously not a done deal here. What does this mean for other tribes. There are more tribes in Florida mm-hmm. than just the Seminole tribe. I think the Porch Creeks, which operate Gretna here in North Florida in Gadsden County, they have that one facility, but they may be interested in expanding their operations in the state.
Yeah, the compact can't supersede the rights of any of the other federally recognized tribes. And we have the Miccosukee tribe and the Porch Band of Creek Indians, both of which have land in trust in Florida, giving them the federal rights to negotiate their own gaming compact with the state. Up to this point, the Miccosukee has never expressed any interest in having a Class 3 gambling compact with the state of Florida. However, the Porch Band of Creek Indians have. They have let this administration know that they would like to begin good faith negotiations for their own gaming compact. And up to this point, the Scott administration has rejected those requests for negotiation. And at some point under federal law, you can't reject the request for negotiations too long, because if bad faith is determined by a court, the Porch Band of Creek Indians will be able to seek redress federally for the gaming compact.
You know, it seems to be very much a patchwork of little things here, little things there. Why not just say, okay, we have gambling, it's here, let's try and bring some organization to the system?
Oh, there's no question. We are probably the worst regulatory jurisdiction in the country when you look at how we treat gambling. We have six different state agencies that touch gambling or gambling revenue in some form or fashion, along with every local government in the state, and three tribal governments. That is not a good system to regulate a multi-billion-dollar industry, and we are a multi-billion-dollar gambling industry in Florida, whether folks like it or not. It's a popular soundbite to say we're not a gambling state, but we are a very, very large gambling state. By volume, we're in the top five in the country. The critical part that the legislature, I think, needs to address is how you pull together the disparate regulatory pieces into a single entity. There are folks out there that say if we create a gambling commission of sorts, that somehow that is an acknowledgement that we are a gambling state and that it is somehow an expansion of gambling to put a single regulator over top of it. And to the folks that say that, I often point to states that have strong gambling regulatory bodies, and they are incredibly effective at keeping gambling contained. That's one of the things that if you look at Florida's history, going back to 1931 when we had our first slot machines in the state, we are not good at keeping gambling contained in Florida, and a lot of it has to do with the legislature's refusal to create a single gambling regulatory body that has the power to keep gambling contained.
So if bills that would have done that have failed in the past, just this past legislative session, you had a really big bill by Representative Dana Young that attempted to bring some order to the chaos. That failed. You have the Seminole Compact that has so far not exactly been met with applause, looking to be in trouble. Is this even doable, or will this ultimately end up with the federal government in some way?
Well, I think it's doable only when you have a legislative leader, you know, with the clout of a Representative Young or Chairman Diaz or even President Designate Negron that steps forward and says, first and foremost, we're going to create a clean regulatory structure, and we're going to keep all gambling expansion discussions separate and apart. And every regulatory bill that's been proposed also includes a host of gambling expansions. The effort by Senator Bogdanoff from a few years ago, the effort by Representative Young recently, included issues like destination casinos and other things, which make it much more difficult to have the dialogue that needs to happen, which is first and foremost, what should the regulator look like and what power should they have, and pull the pieces together. Then after you do that, then you can deal with what's the activity. And frankly, I don't even know that it should happen in the same year. And one of the things that I have been lobbying for is that the legislature separate the issues and in 1 year create the regulator clean, and then in future years come back and deal with expansion and contraction issues. Now, we have a gaming compact and a fantasy bill and a Supreme Court considering slot machine licensure, I don't think that's feasible in 2016. I think you could pass multiple pieces of legislation. I think you could create a regulatory bill and pass it on its own. But I think it's going to be very difficult now because everything has a tendency to get glommed together, and it just dies under its own weight.
You know, technology has really played a big role in this, both with respect to FanDuel and fantasy sports, but also with internet cafes. A couple of years ago, the state moved to shut down internet cafes, as you alluded to earlier. But now even that's starting to pop back up in certain places.
Absolutely. There are more internet cafes open in Jacksonville than there were before the ban. There is a new technology that is currently being considered by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation to try to put a new computer-based slot machine technology in veteran halls and moose lodges and things like that around the state. And you have a state agency that has not been given the authority to really drill into these technologies because of the way the legislature has created the regulatory structure. And that's a big problem. I mean, to those that will say, well, we dealt with the internet cafe industry, that's a great soundbite, but that is nowhere near what the facts are. And the facts are you have these industries that are popping up and you are leaving it to local chiefs of police, local sheriffs, local state attorneys to have to seize these sophisticated computer technologies and to go through in-depth analysis on whether or not it is complying with particular gambling statutes. That's just not the right way to do it. And if you look across the country, every time it's left to local law enforcement, gambling is able to expand because they don't have the sophistication to deal with these technologies in their communities.
So I'm going to ask you to throw out your magic eight ball, shake it up. What are your predictions for what will happen when the legislature reconvenes in January?
So if I shook it and it said it was not clear, ask later, that probably isn't the right answer here, I'm guessing. Now, if I had to look at my magic eight ball, I would say that it is going to be a very difficult session. I think that dropping a compact in along with fantasy sports on the first week of session is tough. 60 days where you have to balance a budget and do a whole bunch of other things is very difficult. I think that discussions will start. It wouldn't surprise me if we had a special session in this spring to deal with it. The Seminole Compact in its current form, I would say, if you were a betting person, I wouldn't bet a lot of money on that being ratified by the legislature. I think that a broad proposal that balances all the interests around the state as well as continues the significant revenue sharing with the Seminole tribe is possible. But right now, you have to have legislative leaders that are willing to really step up and put the major players in a room and have everybody realize that you can't all be happy. That's first and foremost. Everybody can't be happy, and that's tough. I mean, that is the really tough part of it. So I would say, if I was predicting, I think gridlock, unfortunately, is going to continue for the next 60 days during the legislative session, at least.
All right. Well, Mr. Dunbar, thank you so much for coming here and being on It's About Florida. We appreciate you.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Mark Dunbar. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussion on the issues impacting the state.